Welcome to the March 2015 issue of Dialogues in Dermatology. The American Academy of Dermatology is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The American Academy of Dermatology designates this enduring material for a maximum of 2 AMA PRA Category 1 credits. Physicians should claim only the credit commensurate with the extent of their participation in the activity. This activity is recognized by the American Academy of Dermatology for 2 AAD recognized credits and may be used toward the AAD CME award. Participation in this activity is completed by listening to dialogues on CD or a downloaded MP3 file, achievement of a 70% or higher score on the post-test, and completion of an activity evaluation. The date of original release for this issue is March 2015. The expiration date is February 2018. At the conclusion of this learning activity, participants should be able to recognize factors such as location, Breslow depth, defect, and closure type that should be considered when selecting a suture technique. Identify most appropriate filler type to achieve a desired result while minimizing risk. And recognize medical dermatology conditions for which botulinum toxins may be used as a treatment option. Contributors to this issue of Dialogues in Dermatology have disclosed the following financial relationships. Dr. Deanne Mraz Robinson, MD, has been a principal investigator for and received grants and research funding from Allergan, Inc., Cabocon, and Cynosure, Inc. She has been a member of the advisory board and received grants and research funding from Thermi Aesthetics. Dr. Martha Council has served on the advisory board and received honoraria from Suniva Medical, Inc. Dr. Hema Sundaram has been a consultant for and received honoraria from Allergan, Inc., Alma Lasers, Biopel, Inc., Cosmo France, Inc., Eclipse Medical, Galderma Laboratories, LP, Ipsen, MERS Aesthetics, SkinCeuticals, LLC, Strathspey Crown, Suniva Medical, Inc., Syneron, Inc., and Teoxin Laboratories. She is a stockholder and received no compensation from Allergan, Inc., and has been a principal investigator for and received grants and research funding from Biopel, Inc., Cosmo France, Inc., Evalus, Inc., MERS Aesthetics, and Syneron, Inc. Dr. Aaron Gilbert has been a consultant for and received honoraria from Allergan, Inc. and MERS Aesthetics. She has served on the advisory board and received honoraria from MyBody and has served and received fees from Johnson & Johnson Consumer Products Company. Dr. Cindy Yag Howard has served on the advisory board and received honoraria from Ethicon, Inc. All other contributors, including editors, interviewees, reviewers, and staff, reported they have no relevant relationships with commercial interests. A comprehensive list of disclosed financial relationships is available in the syllabus.
Welcome back to Dialogues in Dermatology. This is Terry Cronin, your editor-in-chief. This is Dialogues in Dermatology for March 2015, Volume 71, Issue 3. I hope you're having another wonderful month. I want to remind you about the fabulous new Dialogues in Dermatology app for your smartphone and computer. We are always looking for fun, effective ways to provide CMEs for you, and this convenient app will make dialogues even more accessible and enjoyable. In this month's edition, we have exciting new dialogues with a theme on dermatologic surgery and procedures. From the early work of Dr. Fred Mose, we know that the skin can resolve remarkable wounds with second intention healing, often with satisfactory cosmetic results. The act of closing a wound offers our patients more rapid healing and a more elegant cosmetic outcome. Basic wound closure techniques involving layered closures, wound diversion, flaps, and grafts is common knowledge among dermatologists. In this dialogue, Dr. Cindy Yag Howard and Dr. Linda S. Calls discuss several new and advanced suturing techniques that we hope you will find indispensable in your surgical practice.
Hello, this is Linda Calls. I'm here with Cindy Yag Howard, who is a member of the faculty of the University of South Florida, Morsani College of Medicine, and runs a surgical dermatology practice in Naples, Florida. She lectures around the country and is an author of several articles on surgical techniques and suturing techniques in particular. I had the pleasure of attending her course last year at the AAD, and I really appreciated your practical approach, and I've incorporated several of your pearls into my practice. How did you get started in your interest in suturing techniques?
Well, Linda, my mom taught me to sew as a little girl, so sewing is like second nature to me. When I was in training, like most of us, I was taught basic suturing techniques, but I realized once I was in practice and was doing about 1,500 surgeries each year that each patient and each surgical defect is different. And just like there are different types of stitches that are used depending on the types of seam or hem or fabric that one sews, so too there should be different types of suturing techniques used depending on the particulars of each surgical case. So the same principles apply. Thin, atrophic skin and sun-damaged skin, like on the face of an elderly person, is entirely different than thick, elastic skin on the back of a young person, for instance. Just like silk is different than wool, which is different than spandex. And a large surgical defect on a convex surface, like the scalp or the pretibial region, is much different than a small defect on the preauricular area. Just like sewing a hem is different than sewing a buttonhole. It only makes sense that they should be treated differently.
So how do you first approach the patient? Where do you start?
Well, I like to apply a concept that I refer to as the Taft approach to wound closure. And it's based on what I'm asking the suture to do for me in each step of the defect repair. Taft stands for tension relief, apposition enhancement, and finishing touches.
So explain this a little bit more.
Sure. As silly as it sounds, we need to make sure that we are in charge of the suture and that it does for us what we want it to do. The first thing that we want the suture to do is to relieve excess tension that might exist, particularly in large defects or defects over convex surfaces or defects in tissue that's highly elastic. Now, this will not always be necessary, like in small defects or defects in which the wound edges will likely come together without much tension. The purpose of these stitches is to bring the defect edges in closer proximity to each other, but they are not intended to bring the edges together. Next, we want to make sure that the suture is allowed to bring the defect edges together in apposition. And depending on the type of stitch we use, we can achieve proper eversion to gain good wound healing. Finally, we want to add the finishing touches to the closure to ensure the best cosmetic outcome. It's that simple. The tension-relieving stitches I use most frequently are three different types: the imbrication stitch, the plication stitch, and the imply stitch.
So those are sort of new terms to me. Explain those a little more.
Well, let's start with the imbrication stitch. Imbrication literally means to overlap or pleat or fold over. And in wound closure, it involves using an infradermal, beneath the dermis, approach to take a bite of dermal tissue on each side of the surgical defect far from the wound edge, near the edges of the undermined plane. When the tissue is pulled together, the idea is that the dermal tissue pleats beneath the skin surface. Plication means to fold in order to shorten, and the plication stitch involves taking a bite of the fascia or the fibrous deep tissue on each side of the defect, again far from the center of the wound, and pulling the suture taut to fold the tissue together at the base of the wound and decrease the space between the wound edges. And this stitch is also useful to diminish vacuous spaces in deep defects like large cyst removals. The imply stitch, as its name would suggest, is a combination of the imbrication and the plication stitches. I put those two together and wrote an article about that because I found it to be particularly useful for flaps, and it involves placing what would be considered the first part of an imbrication stitch beneath the pedicle of the flap near its initiation point, and placing what would be considered the first part of a plication stitch on the floor of the defect in the undermined space distal to the flap. The suture, when pulled taut, pulls the flap right into the defect space and allows the flap to fill the defect without putting tension on the free edge of the flap.
So it's a really deep suture that you're putting in to bring that tissue together and release the tension on
Absolutely.
The superficial part of the wound. So you mentioned apposition enhancement. Explain that and what do you use for that?
Well, we're traditionally taught that the best way to bring defect edges together in apposition is by placing one or more buried stitches to let wound edges touch and ideally evert before we place surface stitches to finish off the surgery. But I don't necessarily adhere to that ethos. I don't believe that apposition always requires buried stitches, for instance, and I also do not believe that all repairs require surface stitches. It all depends on the particulars of the patient's skin and the location and characteristics of the surgical defect. That being said, there are a wide variety of stitches used to enhance apposition, and they include a variety of buried stitches, stitches used in cases of extreme tension or extreme tissue atrophy, and stitches used to bring more than two defect edges together in apposition. The buried stitches that can be used in most surgical cases are the simple buried stitch, the buried vertical mattress stitch, the subcutaneous inverted cross mattress or SICM stitch, and the setback buried dermal stitch. In cases of extreme tension, you can also use the SICM stitch, or you can use the tension dispersed vertical mattress stitch, the tension dispersed horizontal mattress stitch, or the lattice stitch. In cases of extreme atrophy, I use a technique called the tape buttress suturing technique. And when bringing together more than two defect edges, I use something called, I use the tip stitch or the buried tip stitch.
Can you give me an example?
In most surgical cases, defect edges are brought into apposition using one of the buried stitches. The standard used to be to place a buried dermal stitch, but in 1989, Dr. Zatelli and Moy wrote what I really consider to be a landmark article describing the buried vertical mattress stitch. It's a variant of the buried dermal stitch that involves reflecting the wound edge back and with a little flick of the wrist, grabbing a bit of the upper reticular dermis on either side of the defect to really enhance wound edge aversion. The difference in the two types of stitches is really subtle but critical to improve wound healing. The SICM stitch is my go-to buried apposition enhancing stitch that I use for virtually every defect repair. I published it in 2012 because it really changed the way I do surgery. It locks well-everted defect edges together in apposition without me needing an assistant to hold the skin together. And it does this by utilizing a pulley effect. And what a pulley effect is, a pulley is a system that redirects force vectors in order to decrease the work required to perform a task. And it can be as simple as placing two continuous stitches side by side in parallel fashion, which is exactly what the SICM stitch does. It essentially is two side by side buried vertical mattress stitches that are continuous and parallel.
I have to say, I've been using this suture for the past year and have been very pleased with how much of a decrease of tension on the wound is. And really, it's really helped me improve my closures quite a bit. So I appreciate that.
Good.
And I would recommend listeners to find the article to see a great diagram of how to incorporate this suture. So
thank you.
Do you tend to use the SICM stitch for most of your closures?
Yes, but the other buried stitch that I will occasionally use is the setback buried dermal stitch that I find works best in concave areas like the nasofacial sulcus or the retroauricular sulcus, where it's difficult to obtain good wound edge aversion. And this stitch is one in which the entry and exit sites of the needle stay completely infradermal beneath the dermis so that the suture itself never passes through the actual edge of the defect. Instead, it stays beneath the defect to really push up the defect edges for more extreme aversion.
You mentioned some other stitches that you use to oppose edges in certain situations. Can you go over some of those as well?
Sure. When tension is an issue, despite the use of a tension-relieving suture like we discussed earlier, I find that the SICM stitch is useful because, as I mentioned, it uses a pulley effect that seems to lock the wound edges together. But other stitches exist that also use a pulley effect, but these are surface stitches, unlike the SICM stitch, and I keep them in the category of apposition-enhancing stitches. They include the tension-dispersed vertical mattress and the tension-dispersed horizontal mattress stitches, and they are like the standard vertical mattress and horizontal mattress stitch, but instead they interlock on the surface of the skin to produce a pulley effect that allows the defect edges to, again, lock together. I rarely use the lattice stitch because I find it's cumbersome and it restricts the blood supply. But when this patient's skin is very atrophic, in another extreme case, I use a suturing technique that I like to call the tape buttress technique, and one day I will publish this.
I have to say, I thought it was a genius technique, really, really interesting. So I want you to explain that a little bit more.
Sure. It requires predetermination of the elliptical excision, which I draw, And after the skin is anesthetized, the site's cleansed with betadine and then wiped dry with sterile gauze. Mastisol is then wiped around and right up to the very edge of the drawn ellipse. And then I place a sterile long surgical strip at the outside edge of the lines of the ellipse, creating a diamond shape. And then I excise the defect. But once I do that, I insert my needle right through the tape as if it were actual skin, and I place individual horizontal mattresses along the surgical line, beginning near the ends of the ellipse and working my way towards the middle. And 2 weeks later, the tape is removed once the stitches are taken out, and it works like a charm every single time.
What type of tape do you like to use?
Unfortunately, my favorite type of tape is no longer being made, so my goal at this academy meeting is to find another tape that will replace it. I used a tape called Proxy Strips that used to be made by Ethicon, and they no longer make it. So the beauty of it was that it had a nice stretch, a little elasticity, so that it could expand and contract as the wound changed shape.
I could imagine that would be very helpful on the neck.
Yes.
So hopefully we can hear about a tape soon that we can substitute.
Yes.
And what about when you need to bring more than two defect edges together?
Oh, that's easy. I usually use a standard tip stitch, but on cosmetically sensitive areas like the face or chest, I often bury the tip stitch to prevent a suture mark from forming. On large defects, especially over convex surfaces, I'll use a spiral or a purse string closure that requires a tip stitch of sorts. It just means that the needle enters and exits the upper reticular dermis at more than one location along the defect edges before it exits the epidermis to be tied off.
What are some of the finishing touches of your Taft approach to wound closure?
Well, like I said earlier, I don't believe that surface stitches are always necessary. In fact, I rarely use them. That way, there are no ugly suture marks, and the patient does not have to have stitches removed, which saves time for both the patient as well as my office staff. I use an absorbable monofilament suture material called polyglycoprone 25, or monocryl, which can be placed subcutaneously or on the surface, and I use it for literally 99% of my surgeries. And that way, I can choose as I'm doing the procedure how I want to finish it off. The suture has a really high tensile strength, so it's strong. It has a low coefficient of friction, so it glides through the skin very easily, although it does require that you place four threads to your knot rather than three, or else you might lose your knot. And it has low tissue reactivity, so it allows for absolutely beautiful wound healing.
So are you saying you're using this for your deep suture, and then you may use it as one suture, that's
one suture for the entire, and it actually comes long too, so you can get it in 18-inch or 27-inch. So with a PS2 needle, you can get it in 4.0 and 3.0 PS2 needles, long and 27-inch.
So how do you finish off your closures?
Most of the time I finish closures using a zipper stitch, which I published in 2013 in Dermatologic Surgery. And the zipper stitch is a variant of the buried running dermal subcutaneous stitch that was first described by Fitaha and Snow in 1989. And as opposed to placing a series of buried dermal stitches in a running fashion, as the buried dermal subcutaneous stitch suggests, the zipper stitch places a series of buried vertical mattress stitches in running fashion, so you get better wound edge aversion. And this type of a running stitch is completely subcutaneous, so it's totally hidden, and I prefer it to the more traditional subcuticular stitch that we all learn about in residency, that weaves back and forth across the excision line like in a snake-like pattern. And I prefer it for two reasons. First, I find that placing the running subcuticular stitch requires really awkward hand rotations and wrist rotations that I just find uncomfortable. And second, the zipper stitch takes a much bigger vertical bite at the defect edges, so you have a lot more strength and maybe even less chance of dehiscence of the wound.
What other recommendations do you have for bandaging or finishing off the procedure?
There are some other hidden stitches that can be used to finish the wound closure, including the percutaneous buried vertical mattress or the percutaneous buried horizontal mattress stitches and their running variants. But I don't use those very frequently because despite the fact that they're completely buried, I often see like a discoloration at the surgical site once it heals. Of course, there are also several options if the surgeon chooses to close the defect using a surface or a transepidermal stitch. And those would include the standard simple interrupted stitch, which I almost never use, a running stitch, a running interlocking stitch, a vertical mattress stitch, a horizontal mattress stitch, a running vertical mattress stitch, a running horizontal mattress stitch, or a running victory stitch. There's so many types of stitches, and we get stuck doing what we like and don't realize that there's so many other options out there. But the surgeon can also use just surgical strips instead of finishing sutures in areas that are not prone to tension or movement, and perhaps even better yet, in areas where there's no drainage and absolutely no tension at the surgical line, you can use surgical glue, which seals off the surgical site and obviates the need for a surgical dressing. So that kind of brings us to the dressings. And after cleansing the site, if I don't use the surgical glue, then after cleansing the site with saline-soaked gauze, I wipe the area around the site with Mastisol and then place a series of surgical strips perpendicular to the surgical line. Over the strips, then I wipe a thin layer of copper cream, it's called CU3 cream, along the surgical line. And then I place a non-adherent Telfa pad, which we cut to fit the surgical site, a piece of gauze to absorb the moisture, and then finally a Tegaderm dressing, which allows air but not water to pass through. And I just love this bandage. The bandage is essentially waterproof, so patients can shower and go about their daily lives without having to be bothered by bandage changes. And after a week, the patient returns for bandage change or suture removal, depending on the location and how long I'm going to keep the stitches in place. And they appreciate the ease of it, and I believe it decreases their risk of infection.
So you just package it up and send them off. They don't have to do any wound care for a week, and a week later, take it all down and take the stitches out.
Absolutely. And because it's a clear Tegaderm dressing, they can see if it happens to bleed. Then they call me and I have them come in for a sooner bandage change, an earlier bandage change. But that's rarely the case.
Are you seeing your patients back where you buried a monocryl absorbable suture, or are you just sending them on their way and calling if they have any complications?
Well, I'm kind of crazy about that kind of thing. I call every surgical patient the night of their procedure to make sure they're doing well. And if their bandage is bloody at all, we do have them come back in and we change the bandage. At 1 week, we see them regardless whether we have to take stitches out or not, because I just like to know that everything is fine and everything's going to heal well. And if they have to have the sutures left in for 2 weeks, we just put another bandage just like we did the first time on there for another week, and then they come back. So it's only because I like to take photographs and I like to know that the patient's doing well.
I think even just having the feedback of being able to look at your closures 1 week later is very helpful. I always try to see my patients as well, just to make sure. It gives me good feedback of how things are healing. And I commend you on calling the patients. I think that small touch really makes patients feel like they're being well cared for and takes a little time out of our day and probably means a lot to patients to have that phone call and be able to have the opportunity to ask questions.
Well, once they realize I'm not a telemarketer, which they all think I am, and then when they realize it's me, they're shocked. And I always get an appreciative thank you when they come back, because they can't believe that they actually got a phone call from their doctor.
Can you kind of walk through the steps of the zipper stitch for us?
Sure. Just like Zitelli and Moy described in 1989 when they described the buried vertical mattress stitch, you do the same type of buried vertical mattress stitch at one end of the surgical line, place just a standard buried vertical mattress, and then without cutting the suture, you just keep placing buried vertical mattress after buried vertical mattress in a running fashion, going all along the entire surgical line. When you get to the penultimate stitch, then you leave a loop, and then you put in, leave a loop externally, and then you put in your last stitch.
So you keep running the stitch till the end, leave a loop up, and then after your last stitch, tie off with that loop, use it as the
exactly.
other end of a knot. And then basically, do you cut the suture at the epidermal level. You lift up and
I pull it up and clip. And then I usually use my Adsense to poke the little knot down, make sure it's good and deep.
I think it's an important point to remember to throw four knots on a monocryl suture. It has a memory where you can see it start to unravel.
Right.
Great. Well, thank you so much for explaining these things to us and your approach. Your closures are beautiful. And
thank you.
I'm appreciative of you sharing your wisdom and your interest in this.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Innovative suturing techniques, because of their optimal functional and cosmetic outcomes, have been embraced by dermatologic surgeons. Dr. Cindy Yag Howard's overall approach to repairing defects is based on the TAFT concept. This acronym includes deep tension relief, subcutaneous or surface apposition enhancement, and surface finishing touches. Specific stitch techniques can be applied in each of these skin layers to achieve optimal results. Deep tension relieving stitches are useful to close wounds in areas of high tension or to diminish dead space in large cyst removals. The imbrication stitch approximates two infradermal bites near the edge of the undermined plane of the wound to pleat the dermal tissue beneath the skin surface. The plication stitch similarly pulls together the fascia or deep fibrous tissue on each side of the defect. In 2012, Dr. Yag Howard described the imply stitch, which is the combination of the imbrication and plication stitches that is particularly applicable in advancement flaps to redistribute tension along the flap, increase tissue motion, and decrease the risk of flap tip necrosis or wound dehiscence. The imply stitch utilizes the stability of underlying fascial tissue to support the pedicle of the advancement flap and reduce tension in the flap distal to the stitch. Subcutaneous apposition-enhancing stitches include the traditional buried dermal or buried vertical mattress. The subcutaneous inverted cross mattress, or sickum stitch, described by Dr. Yag Howard in 2011, is a combination of the buried vertical mattress stitch and the buried pulley stitch that is useful in cases of extreme tension. This fully subcutaneous stitch eases wound approximation with the pulley effect and provides excellent wound aversion with the incorporation of a portion of the upper reticular dermis on each side of the defect through the addition of the buried vertical mattress stitch. Surface apposition enhancing stitches include traditional vertical and horizontal mattress stitches. Dr. Yag Howard also uses the tape buttress technique when closing wounds in very atrophic skin. In this technique, surgical strips are placed on intact skin adjacent to the excision line, and horizontal mattress sutures are run through the tape. The surgical strips serve as a bolster and prevent the suture from tearing through the delicate skin. Surface finishing touches contribute significantly to the cosmetic outcome. Horizontal mattress sutures provide optimum hemostasis, while vertical mattress sutures improve wound edge aversion. Both may be used in interrupted or running series. Simple interrupted and simple running stitches are the most commonly used superficial stitch techniques, but may leave unsightly track marks and require a follow-up visit for suture removal. The traditional running subcuticular stitch is one alternative to transepidermal stitches that may allow for better postoperative cosmetic results. In 2013, Dr. Yag Howard introduced the zipper stitch as a superior running subcuticular wound closure method. The zipper stitch is a running buried vertical mattress stitch that improves wound edge aversion and decreases the risk of dehiscence. In addition to suturing technique, the suture material chosen contributes greatly to the surgical outcome. Different sutures have varying degrees of memory, knot security, tensile strength, stretch, recoil, and overall ease of handling. Polyglactin 10 and polyglycoprone 25 are the two absorbable sutures most commonly used by dermatologic surgeons. Dr. Yag Howard advocates the use of a single package of polyglycoprone 25 for both buried and surface closure as a cost-effective alternative to using separate absorbable and non-absorbable sutures. Though the dermatologic surgeon may favor certain stitches and materials, suture choice and surgical closure technique should be carefully selected on a case-by-case basis to accommodate differences in skin tension and strength.